Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies and, more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Devin Fallon, who is VP of Media Insights and Analytics for Tremor Video, which optimizes video-based advertising for brands and marketers. So we talked to Devin from our studio in San Francisco about the trends he's tracking and the best practices he's exercising. So here's our discussion with Devin. So Devin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Happy to be here.
Totally. So we have a lot to talk about, including diving deeper into everything I just mentioned. But first, let's start with a quick intro for you and for Tremor, for those unfamiliar.
Sure. Yeah, I think you put it really well. Our focus is and always has been on video across a variety of screens and devices, including desktop, smartphone, tablet, and most importantly, over the last probably 5+ years and really gaining in importance, connected TV, or what we sometimes refer to as advanced TV, all mm-hmm. the different ways that consumers watch content connected to their TV. So our company sits alongside all of those different screens, and our key value proposition is really tying all those different environments together at a holistic level to reach and engage our audience or a brand's audience, no matter who they are and where they're watching media. So a lot of our work really revolves around using our own first-party data as well as our third-party vendors to identify compelling audiences, understand their media consumption habits, and reach and engage them in meaningful ways, as well as, of course, you know, of heavy importance for our conversation today, I think, understand the best way to measure the effectiveness of that advertising, both from an optimization perspective and for a longer term strategy perspective for our brands to help them get smarter and better at what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And the kind of connecting the dots angle, I think, is particularly important and increasingly valuable, given a lot of the macro trends that we're tracking, you know, second screen viewing, multi-device viewing, a lot of kind of millennial and Gen Z shifting behaviors, and which, you know, correspondingly kind of shifts the playbook for kind of video ad effectiveness. So we look forward to getting into a lot of that and what you guys are specifically doing to differentiate. But first, what we're going to do is hit the rewind button, like we like to do on this show, and start kind of at the beginning of your career to find out a little bit more about you, and then we'll kind of walk back to the present. So how did you get into all of this? Tell us about kind of like the beginning of your career, the path that brought you into the world of kind of technology and media.
Yeah, I was actually an econ major in college, but I always had an interest in all things advertising. And I had to come to the realization at some point that despite what my mother told me about my great skill as an artist, I didn't necessarily have the creative chops necessary for the creative advertising side of the business. But I did certainly have a head for the numbers, particularly with my background and my college experience. And quite honestly, coming out of college, I was looking for a gig in New York City to be able to move in with my then girlfriend, who's now my wife, and through some family connections, uncovered the wonderful world of media, which was really, to me, the best of the world of advertising combined with my experience, being able to think about it and approach it from a little more of a numbers and analytical and research-focused perspective.
So let's go one level deeper now, like kind of back to the present, and talk a little bit more about Tremor, and kind of we'll start at a high level. The company's kind of product focus, its value proposition, and its points of differentiation. Any kind of high level operational statistics for context, and then we'll go a lot deeper into kind of what you're doing and where the product set begins and ends. But at a high level, let's go one level deeper.
Yeah, this is something I think that a lot of people have known intuitively for a long time. Both Tremor's background as well as my own, starting at Yumi back in 2011, which in many ways was a competitor and complement to Tremor, hence our eventual merging. The industry is really, I think, focused heavily on the power of video. I think some have been focused on that power for a long time, such as ourselves. But it's nice to now see the validation through statistics like video representing over 80% of all internet traffic, U.S. connected TV users expected to reach 200 million by 2021, according to eMarketer. These are stats that make intuitive sense to us, but as I always say to my team, sometimes it really helps to have hard numbers to back up your own personal experience or key intuitions. So that has really held us in strong stead as a video first and foremost company, and it really has left us uniquely positioned to empower brands with high impact advanced TV and cross screen video advertising, to go back to that cross screen piece we touched on earlier. And dating back to earlier this year, I came to Tremor by way of acquisition with a company called Rhythm One. And the idea behind that acquisition, as well as some of our key partnerships with some leading data partners, which we might touch on a little bit later, was that we really were able to exponentially grow our resources to provide advertisers with some of the most impactful video solutions in the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. So to go one level deeper, let's kind of like paint the picture of what Tremor does through kind of the product set, because, you know, we've talked at a high level about the value you're bringing, you know, the companies you work with. Let's talk about how that's kind of, you know, packaged up, because you focus on, you know, at a high level, effectiveness with, you know, video as an ad medium, and there's a lot of kind of things you do within that. So that spans, like, you know, the production itself or assistance with, you know, doing that, but also the audience targeting, the distribution, some of the analytics. So where does that kind of begin and end in terms of what you're offering?
So I think it begins before we're even talking about campaigns or RFPs. Something that my team, the analytics team, really likes to get into is helping our clients understand trends in device ownership, video viewership, which devices are being used, how engagement differs from screen to screen, how attention differs from screen to screen, getting into some of that psychology of the viewer. And from there, it's really then trying to take into account different audience solutions and custom creative opportunities we have to ensure that we're helping our advertisers deliver the most effective campaigns across all of the different screens on which we run. So key part of that is our data partnerships, which really provide a full suite of targeting solutions to reach audiences at an even more granular level and determining the most appropriate audience based on several key data variables, including location, which I know is a big passion point for you guys, TV viewing habits, social media, performance, behavior, you name it. Through a mix of our own first-party data as well as some of those third-party data partnerships, we're looking at leveraging as many of those different opportunities as possible, with the key being that we're looking at the scale of an audience that runs the gamut from all those different devices I talked about before. And lastly, the in-house custom creative studio is something that has been really exciting for me to see and be a part of since our merge from Rhythm One to Tremor, because it allows us to do a couple really cool, in my perspective, things, including optimize existing video ads. We know that somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 to 95% of digital video advertisers are repurposing their linear TV ads, which is completely fine. We understand that, and in many cases, digital is trying to mimic the TV environment. But there are certainly things that we can do to help add on to the engagement and brand recognition of those spots. They also are able to repurpose long-form assets or social assets and doll them up for distribution across other video environments. And if that wasn't enough, we occasionally even dabble in full end-to-end video production based on assets that might be available from a client who doesn't have the budget to create a full-blown video ad. So all of that goes into finding the right audience, engaging them in a meaningful way, and ensuring that we're delivering on our brand's KPIs.
Yeah, that's great. I can see that all those pieces dovetail together, but also I imagine that the way they're packaged is customized for each individual client that you work with, based on, as you said, at the front end, really more of a kind of solutions-driven approach as opposed to kind of just pushing features on them. So that really resonates. Now, you also mentioned kind of the interplay of linear, digital, and just this evolving mix of media that we all have. One of the things that you guys do to drill down one level deeper is retargeting, but retargeting in a different way that we often kind of correlate to that, such as kind of online display ad retargeting. It's really retargeting for the second screen. And I think that that's interesting given the increasing prevalence of second screen viewing. So unpack that a little bit for us in terms of that evolving user behavior and what you're doing to kind of craft strategies around that to glean more kind of value and understanding for the companies you're working with.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite topics to talk about because like a lot of things in our industry, this is an area where our business intersects with the personal. And most people, I would argue, unless you're one of the few people who doesn't watch any TV, most people can personally relate to this experience in some way, shape, or form. As you mentioned, Mike, the numbers are pretty clear, as well as I think our own personal experiences. Distracted or multitasking with other devices like smartphones and tablets and computers has been around for a little while and maybe originally skewed younger, more millennial, Gen Z focused. But at this point in time, it really does run the gamut across all demographics essentially, and across a huge variety of content types. So no matter what people are watching on the biggest screen in the household, there's a better than even chance that they at some point or at all points during that viewing have another screen out in front of them closer to their face and arguably a little more personal in nature in terms of the content available to them. So one of the partnerships that we've been really proud of and has been really fruitful for us is with Alphonso, our ACR partner, Automatic Content Recognition. So that, of course, is a technology that allows for us to understand the ads and content that people are watching on their television screen and make targeting decisions based on that. And the cool thing is there are a number of different implementations that can come into play there, including retargeting based on someone being exposed to a brand's message on linear TV. That's a great way to keep up your frequency, to maybe engage with a slightly different message, maybe a little more down funnel message or even a call to action. There's also competitive conquesting. So if we're trying to reach audiences who have already been exposed to a brand's competitor and give them a different take or a different perspective, we can surround tentpole events. So knowing that there are always going to be key award shows, key sporting events, high profile events like that, knowing that the cost for a brand to run on linear TV for a lot of those opportunities is incredibly high, this is a way for us to potentially surround that content by identifying users who, for instance, are watching the Oscars but might have their smartphone open in front of them and give us another opportunity to reach them. And lastly, before I come up for air, is the opportunity to essentially do the opposite of the first use case, which is if we have a brand that's heavily invested in the linear TV space and has fairly saturated their audience, we can use ACR technology to essentially negatively retarget or avoid the users that have already seen that message in an attempt to help fill out the last 5, 10, 15% of the reach curve that they're not getting in the linear TV space.
Yeah, I like the concept of negative retargeting, given that often I feel that retargeting fails when I'm being shown things that I've already seen and decided I don't want, when in more of like an e-commerce context, mm-hmm. or things in a shopping cart that I abandon. The signal there should be that I do not want that, and it is a wasted impression to continue showing it to me. So I like that. So we're actually going to pause for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Devin Fallon.
Hello everyone, this is Mike Bolin, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Brandify, which is Street Fight's parent company. It's a local marketing company that provides a range of services for brands with brick and mortar store locations. So that's everything from retail stores to restaurants and moving companies and banks and healthcare providers and several other verticals. And Brandify manages the digital outposts where most consumers encounter these businesses today. So we're talking Google Maps and Facebook, Yelp, Apple Maps, and Bing. And the name of the game is really to create a compelling presence on these sites and apps and to engage with consumers more effectively using advanced reputation management tools. And this is all really compelled by the fact that 97% of consumers regularly search online for local businesses. So brands today can't afford to be missing from all those channels or lack multimedia content or contact information or visible responses to customer feedback. So Brandify synthesizes and optimizes all these channels through a local marketing platform. And it's all about standing out and winning the loyalty and lifetime value of tech-savvy consumers. So to learn more, visit Brandify.com.
So we're back. My guest is Devin Fallon. So Devin, before the break, we were talking about all of the things that Tremor is doing to connect the dots. We're talking linear TV, digital TV, the growing prevalence of second screen viewing, and all the kind of technologies and smart approaches you're putting into connecting those dots to provide better effectiveness and insights to the advertisers and the brands and the marketers you work with. So now let's go one level deeper and to kind of like paint that picture. Let's show rather than tell, as I like to say. Are there any kind of recent mini case studies or examples that you can discuss that kind of quantify the value you're bringing to some of these brands you're working with?
Sure, yeah. A couple come to mind, the first of which is Rachel Ray's pet food brand Nutrish. Mm-hmm. So we worked with them to utilize the ACR technology that I had been talking about before to retarget viewers that had already seen their message on linear TV and really drive home that message, keep up the awareness, and try to give them a slightly more lower funnel message on the other screens in our repertoire between desktop and mobile and tablet. And that actually drove incremental sales to the tune of $1.1 million. So, wow. So they were fairly happy with how that one worked out.
Sure.
The other example that comes to mind is for The Masked Singer. I don't know if you've ever seen it. My wife and I watched the first season, and it was pretty entertaining. But a different use case there, we were essentially looking for people who had identified through their TV viewership that they might be interested in a show like The Masked Singer, essentially based on the other shows that they were watching.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, to put it simply, contextual targeting, but utilizing that ACR piece to be able to understand actual viewership patterns for people among potentially competitive or complementary shows. And that actually was able to drive a 14.6% overall lift in TuneIn for Fox between the live plus 3-day ratings after the premiere.
Yeah, that's that show with those like super creepy masks that I've probably seen commercials for during football games. Is that the one?
They run the gamut, I think, from cool to cute to creepy, yes.
Yeah, nice. I bet they show the kind of shocking ones during the commercial break as a kind of provocative approach. But that's great. Thank you for painting that picture. I think that really drives it home. Now, there were a few different kind of like product categories there that are very varied. I mean, one was, you know, pet food, entertainment with The Masked Singer. Do you guys specialize in any kind of product verticals, or does your technology map to any particular types of consumer products, or do you consider it more of a kind of horizontal play?
I think we would consider our solutions to be applicable across a wide variety of verticals, obviously understanding that the products, the approach, the targeting, the measurement are all going to change.
Oh, totally.
Uniquely specific to each vertical and each brand.
Yep.
But certainly have had a lot of success with entertainment, retail, and auto. Those are three that really stand out to us. And one that we feel there's a lot of opportunity, and this is another one that I'm personally very excited about, both because of the uniqueness of the vertical and because of some of my own personal experience with some of these brands, is DTC, or direct-to-consumer brands. We know a lot of them have come out of the gate in the last 5-10 years being laser focused on essentially direct response, low funnel, as cheap as possible cost per acquisition. And what's been interesting and really exciting to see is a lot of these brands that started purely in the display and search space are now starting to see the value of video, the incremental value that it can have to provide more of that upper funnel awareness before hitting someone with that display or search ad that's probably going to drive the conversion. So at Tremor, we really believe that video can offer that impact, not just on the upper funnel, but even start to have an impact on that the lower funnel metrics. And we're really hoping that we can start to become a more critical part of a lot of major DTC brands' 2020 advertising strategies.
Now, it's interesting. The DTC brands, too, because it's kind of they're newer, they're looking to shake things up. I'm not sure if this is just my selective eye, but I've seen that on the creative side, they tend to do things that are very very innovative. And I think probably the first one out of the gate that everyone kind of associates with is Dollar Shave Club, and just kind of the humor and the kind of new approaches that they have injected into their creative, which of course is something that's slightly different than what we're talking about now, is kind of interesting. But I guess my point is, I imagine they will be kind of fun and interesting and you know, adoptive companies to work with in terms of trying new things. Would that be a fair statement?
I think so, but at the same time, it's a really interesting dichotomy because I completely agree with you in that we've seen some really big cases or noticeable cases of these brands doing, you know, stunt advertising or really interesting and unique and compelling creative to stand out. And on the flip side, I would argue that they also are the types of brands that are so heavily focused on metrics, right? Their businesses have the benefit of being able to derive all of these metrics in fairly short order. So we're not talking about major CPGs that might need to wait a couple weeks or a month or two to run their MMAs to understand the impact on sales that their linear TV had. These are brands that are able to pull levers and understand the impact fairly quickly. So that's definitely an important piece of the puzzle for us, is to understand how we can effectively leverage our own data and our third-party vendors' data to provide unique and compelling insights to help make data-driven decisions for these brands, since we know that that is ultimately how they often live and die.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And their affinity for data and immediate gratification, I think, is supported by your initial point about out of the gate, they were very much into things like search and things that are so immediately quantifiable and kind of hyper-efficient in terms of return on ad spend. So let's shift a little bit towards one thing you said earlier really resonated, which is some of the behavioral trends, and panning back from just behavioral, just some of the macro trends we're seeing out there that require, you know, sort of a moving target in terms of strategy refinement and what is kind of effective. And by macro trends, I mean a few things. One is kind of the shifting of the technology, the advancement in data and tracking, but also behavioral shifts. We talked earlier about second screen viewing, the kind of the advent of the Gen Z that is becoming increasingly buying empowered as they kind of cycle into the ranks of the adult consumer population. So I guess that's all to say, what are the kind of other kind of macro trends that you're tracking that are impacting your ongoing kind of strategy refinement to be most effective and to really kind of get ahead of these things on behalf of, you know, your clients and your effectiveness?
One area that's really of chief interest to me, I'm glad you mentioned the behavioral, and you might be able to guess where I'm going with this just based on the conversation we've already had, but the way that viewers and consumers in the advanced TV space find and access content is one that is immensely interesting to me, again, from both a personal and professional level. And I think the timing of this recording is fairly fortuitous because, as I'm sure you're aware, we recently had a couple major new streaming subscription service launches.
Oh yeah, Disney Plus,
Apple TV Plus, and Disney Plus. And also, as I'm sure you're aware, there are a number of other major service launches on the horizon. And I think these are really poised to have a tremendous impact on audience behavior. Obviously, there's more content available than ever before, and we're talking about this prestige content that's available for you between HBO, between all the Star Wars stuff on Disney and all the money Apple put into their content. But I think we're already starting to see signs that viewers might be getting overwhelmed by the sheer volume of service choices and the cost that comes with maintaining these services. At the risk of oversimplifying, I think we're dealing with a situation where it's not that Netflix used to have everything, but if you look at what Netflix offered 4 or 5 years ago, before they really got heavily into their own original content, there was a lot of stuff there that now is either not available or is available on some other service that's sitting behind a $5 to $15 pay gate. So what we're starting to see is
fragmented set of services.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, there's some interesting stats in the marketplace about the number of services that customers are in theory willing to hold, which Wall Street Journal, I think, recently mentioned it was around 4. I've seen other numbers that put it around 6. But the amount they're willing to pay generally does not work out from a math perspective with the, you know, the cost per service. So what we really see this as is a wonderful opportunity for ad-supported video on demand in the advanced space to fill in some of the gaps in programming and content for content and viewers. So in terms of viewers looking for a piece of content that maybe used to live on Netflix and then seeing it's not there, our bet is that they're going to take the path of least resistance to find that content. And that often means watching a few ads before they get to see it on a free ad-supported platform, rather than start an entirely new subscription or pay to rent or buy that piece of content.
Yeah, it's going to be so interesting to see this unfold. And it's almost like we are gravitating back towards the cable bundle, but in a different form. But that price point is interesting that you mentioned, because it comes down to kind of average family kind of price elasticity and factors like that, price sensitivity. But if you add up, say, Hulu, HBO Go, the oncoming HBO, the Disney Plus, Netflix, etc., you know, you mentioned the average of 3 to 4, you know, you add those up and you're starting to get back into that $90 to $120 range that was the cable bundle, right?
Exactly.
It's interesting. So we're actually going to pause there for a commercial break. When we come back, more from Devin Fallon.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'd like to talk to you today about Brandify, which is Street Fight's parent company. It's a local marketing company that provides a range of services for brands with brick-and-mortar store locations. So that's everything from retail stores to restaurants and moving companies and banks and healthcare providers and several other verticals. And Brandify manages the digital outposts where most consumers encounter these businesses today. So we're talking Google Maps and Facebook, Yelp, Apple Maps, and Bing. And the name of the game is really to create a compelling presence on these sites and apps and to engage with consumers more effectively using advanced reputation management tools. And this is all really compelled by the fact that 97% of consumers regularly search online for local businesses. So brands today can't afford to be missing from all those channels, or lack multimedia content or contact information or visible responses to customer feedback. So Brandify synthesizes and optimizes all these channels through a local marketing platform. And it's all about standing out and winning the loyalty and lifetime value of tech-savvy consumers. So to learn more, visit Brandify.com.
So we're back. My guest is Devin Fallon. So Devin, before the break, we were talking about lots of things, lots of the changing behavior from audiences, lots of the technology itself, the landscape of kind of increasingly fragmented streaming media channels and the opportunity that affords for bringing more clarity to brand advertisers. A lot of good stuff there. So one thing that kind of bubbles up from all of that is like the measurement itself. You talked a lot about how you guys are innovating with, you know, how you're measuring behavior, how you're connecting those dots. But stepping back, what about not just the how, but the what? Like what is being measured, the KPIs themselves and the metrics themselves? And, you know, we traditionally have been in this very kind of CPM-obsessed world, especially from a lot of brand advertisers. How are those measurements themselves evolving? And what are you guys doing to kind of, you know, work with those types of KPIs to better capture, you know, the insights of what audiences are doing?
Yeah, I think to your point, we've historically oftentimes been limited to fairly basic reporting metrics, video completion rates, click-through rates, and things like that. But where we have been seeing a lot of progress, thanks to I think the trendsetters on the display side of things, is in getting digital video measurement closer to those true down funnel attribution based outcomes that brands truly care about. So we referred earlier to offline sales lift, to tune in for entertainment clients. Lift in foot traffic is of course also really important. So as close as we can get to those true outcomes, and finding ways that we can optimize mid campaign ideally, and then help those outcomes to really inform the strategies that we are recommending for our brands moving forward is something that is a huge focus for us. And one of the areas that is really exciting for us is being able to tie advanced TV back to a lot of these metrics. You know, we've been able to do offline attribution from desktop for a long time, for mobile for a long time. But advanced TV, because of the fragmentation in the ecosystem, all the different operating systems and platforms, it's historically been fairly difficult to measure that space in a really holistic way. And we're really starting to push the boundaries there. And an important piece of that is managing client expectations to help them understand we don't necessarily expect the same lift in offline sales or lift in foot traffic from a CTV ad as we would from a mobile ad, just given where those two devices sit in a consumer's day-to-day media consumption, where they, you know, physically are located from a geographical perspective. But we do want to be able to demonstrate that connected TV or advanced TV can play a really important part in that holistic video strategy between the upper funnel messaging or branding messaging on advanced TV to then something a little more middle or low funnel on desktop and mobile. So,
yeah.
You know, it's definitely not a one size fits all for us, but having the ability to measure these different types of outcomes is certainly table stakes and really important for us when we're helping our brands to achieve their goals.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And leading right from that, you know, what are you most excited about that you're working on now? And what can we expect from Tremor in 2020?
Well, as you can probably tell, we're really excited about the future of advanced TV and all of the data and measurement that we can bring to bear across a wide variety of platforms and partnerships. That's really one of our key focuses is we have partnerships directly with a number of OEMs, original equipment manufacturers, as well as apps that ensures a scale that can really rival anyone else in the space. So leveraging our unique data partnerships and creative solutions on top of that scale is something that we only expect to grow and to expect us to really stand out. But we also want to continue to integrate our offerings with Rhythm One to develop new products and continue to optimize and enhance our DSP interface and technology to improve the experience for our self-service clients, because we don't want to forget about them.
Of course, yeah. That's exciting. We'll all be watching that closely here at Street Fight. So now let's dive right into our lightning round. So what's something about you that few people know about?
So I had to pull my wife about this to make sure it was something that was interesting. And one thing she brought up is that I successfully taught myself how to whistle from scratch as a full-grown adult, which is not so much a brag when you understand that I think I drove my wife crazy for the probably 2 weeks or so when I could only whistle one note. So, you know, it's brought a lot of joy to my life, although it hasn't necessarily brought a lot of joy to my family's life.
Yeah, that's a good one. We've never heard that one. And it resonates with me because I cannot whistle. I'm probably one of the few adults like you previous to that can't whistle. I just kind of never learned it as a kid. So maybe I'll take some inspiration for that and teach myself. So what's a profession you'd want to have if you're not doing what you do now?
I don't know that I could necessarily make a living off of it. I think there's probably only one person making a living off of it, which is Will Shorts, but I would love to be a cruciverbalist, which is someone who makes crossword puzzles. I love crossword puzzles, and being able to get paid to make and solve them would be pretty high on my list.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that documentary that came out about 10 years ago or longer about Will Shorts and the New York Times crossword puzzle was fascinating, and it's actually a good friend of mine from college's brother produced that movie. What was it called? Wordplay, I believe.
I think so.
Great documentary. So what is a company or tech startup that you think would be most exciting to be a part of at early stages, either a fly on the wall or a participant?
So I think I would generalize this a little bit to an industry, and that's augmented reality is an area that I think has such promising tech that has so many use cases, not just for entertainment. I think that's what a lot of the early use cases are, but for utility as well. And I think the challenge is that some of these use cases might be so radical that it can be hard for people to picture them. But I do think there are some companies out there, maybe that exist today or maybe that won't exist for another couple of years, that can successfully convey the value of utility-based AR to the public who stand to reap tremendous profits.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent a lot of time looking at augmented reality for my own company, AR Insider, but also for Street Fight with the crossroads of local commerce and AR. A lot of AR solutions are, you know, things anchored to the physical world, which obviously has a lot of implications and relevance for local commerce in having, you know, informational overlays on, mm-hmm. you know, storefronts, everything from storefronts to and so many other technologies coming into it, computer vision, machine learning. It's certainly a fascinating time. So that answer resonates with me. What's your favorite tech product or app that you use as a consumer?
So, you know, kind of pivoting from AR, I haven't spent a ton of time with true VR tech, but mm-hmm. the time I have spent with tech like Oculus Rift mm-hmm. have convinced me that from like a gaming and entertainment perspective, it's unlike anything that you've ever seen. And I think there's a bit of a challenge here in that so many people have experience with VR through smartphone mounted headsets, which I don't think there's anything wrong with, but it's truly, to me, like a transcendent experience to be in a real VR environment with true hand controllers. And as I like to call myself a reformed gamer, it really scratches that itch in a really unique way.
Yeah, that 6 degrees of freedom, full VR that you see in things like the Rift and even Oculus Quest are certainly things that really kind of make the experience. I think this is what John Carmack at Oculus likes to say, poisoning the well. A lot of people tried mobile VR and then were turned off from it. It's going to take years to gain their affinity back because that lower end experience was what they thought it was. So it's an interesting concept. And, you know, going back to kind of analytics and consumer sentiments, I think all of that is going to go into hyperdrive with VR because of just more signals and biometrics to track everything from eye tracking to, you know, heart rate and other things for these immersive experiences. And the data sets are just going to go into hyperdrive in terms of the stuff that, you know, companies like you guys do. So I'm sure you're excited about that, too. So who's someone from the business world that you admire most and why?
So if I can take this one a little bit out there, you know, what really comes to mind is thinking of the whistleblowers who worked at Theranos and helped uncover what was going on there. I know this is a little bit unconventional, but I like to think I have a pretty strong moral compass and would do the right thing when faced with a difficult situation. But it is really daunting to put myself in their shoes and try to understand the personal and professional risks they took to speak out against what they considered to be a somewhat problematic institution.
Yeah.
But for a slightly more conventional answer, I'm going to say Bob Iger at Disney, I think, has made some really aggressive and risky moves during his tenure that, you know, have clearly worked out and are a good lesson that just because you're the market leader doesn't mean you get to stay there without bold strategy and action.
Yeah. The Theranos answer is great. I think we definitely haven't heard that one. And I like it because the amount of guts it took in such a didactic culture, you know, that could not have been easy to pull off. So that's great. So winding down here, what are some passions or hobbies that help you mentally unplug from work?
Board games, crossword puzzles, really anything that helps keep my mind sharp is pretty high on my list.
Awesome. And then lastly, we talked about the company goals and what we can expect going into 2020. What about you personally, your personal goals for the remainder of the year and into 2020?
Yeah, there's not too much time left in 2019. So I'm going to say that something I'm always working on is being the best manager and coworker employee I can be at work and being the best dad and husband I can possibly be outside of that.
Yeah, good answer. That's actually a great place to end it. So that's all the time we have. I want to thank you, Devin, for spending time with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Also, stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.